Hi everyone, it's Richard Lewis here. Just recording a quick introduction after the fact. We just completed an interview with our guest, Ryan Musselman from Infinite Esports. You might know him as Optic J. Basically, there were some internet connections. He reached out to us to record an interview in the aftermath of some sort of negative headlines about Infinite Esports, so it kind of came together quickly. So there are some connection issues. There's a little bit of lag. He was on a Wi-Fi connection using a MacBook, but hopefully the content holds up. Just wanted to make you aware of that going in. Hope you enjoy the content. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Richard Lewis Show. It's going to be a little bit shorter than usual. I got a very special guest here to talk about Infinite Esports and Optic. We have the president over at Infinite Esports, Ryan Musselman. You might know him as Optic J. Just before we get into the interview as well, shout out to the sponsors, Rivalry.gg, for making this content possible. Go over and use Rivalry.gg/RL. For $350 of VIP bonuses. And with that out of the way, let's get into it. Ryan, first of all, thanks very much for joining me. I understand that, you know, you had lots of things you wanted to get off your chest. There was lots of things you wanted to talk about in terms of public perception regarding Infinite. And I'll just give you my external perspective. I think it might be in line with a lot of Optic fans. You know, I was actually scripting a video before we ended up arranging this interview where I was going to say, you know, Infinite Esports is turning Optic into a mess. That was going to be the central theme. I won't lie to you. I think a lot of Optic fans share that view. I guess we'll start there. Why do you think the public perception right now is that Infinite has been a bad far for Optic Gaming?
Yeah, I think because it's true, right? I think at a high level, we can dive into this and we can unpack and ask the more difficult questions. Obviously, the Infinite of today is not what we wanted it to be when the acquisition and the organization of the company came together. And, you know, kind of what you're having here is this situation where it used to be two guys making decisions about Optic, right? Hector and myself. And then this acquisition happens, and now you've got like 10 other LLCs involved. So agendas get thrown into the mix. People get empowered to make decisions about the brand who probably shouldn't be. And it kind of creates this storm of differing agendas. People are trying to do like 500 different things. There's lack of due diligence, a lack of focus, you know, just some internal alignment that absolutely needs to take place. You know, it's beyond overdue. And so I share that sentiment with the fans. I understand where they're coming from. And ideally, we get to the bottom of a lot of it in this interview. And then really, we just see it come into action. Otherwise, it's just nonsense.
Well, sure. Let's start with one of those people that were added to the board, brought in as CEO when the Infinite acquisition took place, a chap called Chris Chaney. Some people might know the name. Maybe some Optic fans don't. But basically, Chris Chaney was somebody that was kind of instrumental in connecting the financiers and Optic Gaming. You know, I've spoke with Chris, but the fact that somebody like Chris Chaney was kind of able to effectively take over and run the day-to-day business of Optic seems very surprising to me. Chris Chaney's experience from the research I did prior to this interview showed me that he hadn't run a company before. So it seems very strange he was allowed to start with such a big project, because obviously we're not just talking Optic Gaming, we're talking everything else in the Infinite esports portfolio. And then he only had about 1 year's esports experience. And we all know, you know, I know, this industry is like nothing else on planet Earth. It's very unique, has its own ecosystems, its own trends. So I guess I gotta, you know, ask you, you're somebody who is old school Optic. You're somebody, as you said, you and Hex were running this thing way back when. Why is it somebody like Chris Chaney that gets the top slot and not somebody like yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. There were no formal interview processes to handle this. I think part of the situation is you have the individual who is closest to the financiers and who's kind of organizing Infinite overall and the different LLCs that were coming in. And so what I think happened in this process, it just kind of assumed that, I guess there was just a basic assumption is this is how it's going to be. And the question was never really raised. So it's not, it didn't get formally evaluated.
as I said, I mean, it's not like Hector disappeared when he sold the organization. One of the things that I always understood when the buyout happened was that even if Chris Chaney was new and inexperienced, Hector, who is the heart of the organization, would still have some form of influence in guiding where Optic went. And that increasingly seems to not be true. I mean, I haven't seen Hector talk about Optic. It seems very clear to me he's been either forced or has decided to take a back seat on all of this. And it's let people like Chris run amok and make these terrible business decisions. So where's Hector while all this is happening? Because I can't imagine he's happy watching his, like, you know, when I've talked to him privately, he said Optic is his child, you know. So he can't be happy that it's getting, you know, flushed down the tube. So what happened to Hector?
You know, rightfully so. I wouldn't either if I were him. And really, to clearly air any of the bad decisions that have happened, and like, Hector's not going to make any of those decisions, right? Like, he's close to the brand. It's his child. So I want to clear the air specifically on that. Hector had nothing to do with any of the negative perceptions at all. In fact, when you look at what's happened since the first year, I actually take responsibility for not speaking up and being more aggressive and saying, hold on a second, we really should question whether or not we're making these decisions. I think the route that I took was more so, okay, how can I be a member? There's a lot of different things happening and I want everyone to win. I want everyone to be happy. I want to find like that solution. And I think naturally that just creates, it creates a challenging situation to overcome, probably too much for one person to really get through. You know, he's focused on content, and I think that's going to be key going forward too, as we continue discussion of like, how do we start looking at content in other ways to really push forward. So if I didn't answer that deep enough, like, let's continue talking.
Yeah, well, let's bring that up. You know, my understanding of Optic as a project has always been that it was a content platform first, that it excelled in creating compelling content, doing influencer marketing activations, you know, making almost like celebrities out of the people that came to the brand through that content, through those activations. And then you had esports, which was almost like it was a coincidence that they happened to excel in that as well. That's how I've always thought of Optic. Content first, esports a very close second. And yet that vision seems to have been completely lost somewhere along the line. You know, you see what seems to be less content coming out of Optic these days, and expansions into games that, you know, they're happening a little bit too fast. You're not getting great teams, you're not getting great players, strange hires, and ultimately a kind of thinning out and watering down of the brand. So who's responsible for that shift away from the Optic we know into this new kind of weird Optic where it's like that you're trying to be jack of all trades?
Yeah, it's a part of that old leadership model, and part of the reason why there's been changes at the very top, right? With the new president, and then of course other internal changes as well. It has a lot to do with how the company was being run. Like, when you try to put something together, think about this: 10 plus LLCs coming together in one situation, and if you lose sight of the crown jewel of Optic with it, well, you're going to go in all these different directions, and before you know it, all you're completing is busy work, but lack of checks and balances leads to all the, you know, the PR situations we're having here. So a lot of what I really want to do, like literally within my first 90 days of this role, or at least for the rest of the year, 60 days, is have this renewed sense of going back to the, and it's like, we can't just launch content to launch content, right? So going back to the roots in terms of saying, like, how do we get more out there and continue to innovate with it? We don't innovate, we're going to die, right? That's true for every company. But also in saying that too, like, when I say go back, it doesn't mean that everything going back to perfectly how it was. I think there were things, even as Optic, we could ask, how could we do better in terms of content creation to continue to innovate? All the other companies out there that are doing, or getting into esports, they're doing really well with content, like your 100 Thieves, for example, right? It's far more competitive than it. So we need to have a situation where people are showing up on time, committing to an aggressive schedule. There's a lot of accountability. And that's, by all means, I mean that very constructive, but we have to all kind of really step up and continue to innovate in that realm. And if we don't do that, then it's hard to say, like, where are the roots then, right? We need that renewed sense. We're going to be doing less. But again, it has to happen collectively together. So that's really going to be key in terms of how we actually make changes and put our words into action.
Well, on a business level, are you guys already feeling the pinch in terms of some of these bad decisions? Because, you know, I remember Optic announcing sponsors like Pepsi, you know, Chipotle. You know, I don't know where you are in terms of sponsors, but I was looking into it before this interview, and it looks like, you know, some of these bigger brands that Optic have been able to go out and get in the past aren't there anymore. And that's incredibly sad, especially at a time when we just had it announced the other day. You know, there was these 10 esports organizations that were all valued over 100 million with Envious just on the outside. And it's like, you know, where's Optic Gaming in all of this? Optic Gaming, for me, is one of the huge brands in the esports space. It's been reflected in its business partners and choice of sponsors. And it's just day and night right now to where it is in terms of that brand exposure. So is somebody kind of manage, like, there has to be somebody within the company that's taking responsibility and ownership for that. And if so, who is it? Why do you feel that you haven't been able to sustain those long-term partnerships with those big companies?
Yeah, so part of the challenge here too is that the agency that we're working with, there's a respectable parting ways when the acquisition happened, right? Naturally, so sometimes that goes through. And the challenge I don't think was really thought through was that, okay, well, if you're going to change companies and we're bringing it in-house, right, to our partnership agency, there should be a pipeline really built up, or at least someone who's going to be in that role should convert and bring a lot of the relationship to sponsorships. And that didn't happen, right? So now you have a situation where throughout 2018, we're resetting this pipeline and trying to make headway on conversations. And the sales cycle this time around was longer than what we're normally used to, right? So those conversations are still happening. We're actually feeling very encouraged by some that are happening right now. And it's being course corrected for sure. So,
well, I mean, all these negative headlines kind of help that process.
Yeah.
And let's be real, I can't remember the last positive thing I read about Infinite Esports. It's been one kind of debacle after another. You know, I've got them in front of me. We'll talk about each one kind of individually. But let's, again, right at the start of this interview, you said, you know, there's a negative perception around Infinite, and it's kind of accurate. So if fans are feeling it and journalists like me are feeling it, God only knows how sponsors and business partners who are now spoiled for choice in the esports space feel about it all. So have these negative headlines come at a bad time? Are they starting to impact on the day-to-day business?
You know, it's more of a morale thing. They're not impacting that side of the business per se. What I think what's really important is that Optic is still a really strong entity despite road bumps from Infinite. Again, remember, it's more of a situation where there's kind of just that mismanagement overall of the brand, because you have too many cooks in the kitchen, right? Too many hands in the pot making decisions. So, but it hasn't taken away from the fact that Optic, the Green Wall, those things are still strong. And I think in any company's history, you're certainly going to go through some type of road bump, but it's nothing that's unfixable. It's nothing that you can't really kind of bolster up and again, revisit and refocus in order to renew that sense of just that strong passion, that strong content flow, the strong competitiveness, right? So it's by no means a situation where it's completely out of reach. It will be nice and challenging, no doubt, right? We want to be very realistic to that sense. But I believe where we're at now in terms of our internal leadership model, how we're focusing across the board. I mean, we haven't really announced, I don't even know if we even need to do this, but some of the companies are actually consolidating. So there is an increased focus and increased accountability in order to hit on any type of business deliverable or objective, anything from content to sponsorships to, you know, how we're treating teams and how we're looking at expanding in the future. So a lot of those things are trying to be implemented.
I think it'll be, you know, maybe comforting to the fans to hear about this, you know, consolidation and scaling down. Yeah. We saw all the layoffs that happened, which included Chris Chaney himself as CEO being ousted, and a lot of other staff were kind of cut out as well, including some people on the editorial side of things. Yeah. Personally, you know, I do find it very hard to forgive because of how harmful and detrimental it is to the esports industry as a whole. I know a lot of these people went into this project thinking it was long-term, and in particular, one firing stands out. and that is Roman from the League of Legends side of things. This is a guy who's an iconic figure in League of Legends. This is a guy who built his own brand with Unicorns of Love. He's worked for Razer, hugely experienced, and somebody who is incredibly well liked in the industry across the board.
Absolutely.
And yet, this is somebody who is somehow deemed surplus to requirements, and he walked away from his own brand, his own Optic Gaming, if you like, to come and work for Optic. And he seems to have been tossed aside like a piece of garbage. I mean, that's like a terrible, no pun intended, that's terrible optics. That looks absolutely awful to everyone externally. So what's happening with these firings? I mean, are they being compensated? Is there a chance they can come back to the company? Is this all temporary? You know, what's going on there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, too, what we'll do is unpack the, you know, in that Sports Business Journal article where I talked about, like, healthy operating position, right? Let's really unpack what that means. We already covered some of it where I said there's too many people doing too many different things. But I think what's key here is, we did severances. We tried to take care of the employees as much as possible who were adversely affected. There would be only a few situations in which maybe, like, one or two people would not be rehirable. And I'm sure we can dive into that as well. But if there is an opportunity in the future, when we look at growth from a very calculated perspective, then absolutely we'll consider rehires. But by no means are, you know, in the midst of us going back and saying, okay, we're going to refocus on our roots and go back and really bolster up there. But by no means are we going to start going out and then rescaling and re-adding and adding all this incredible disconnected type focus, if that makes sense, or disconnected type objectives. So, but yeah, the opportunity is there. And look, a lot of these people that had the unfortunate news of being let go are good people that worked really hard and cared not only about Optic, but how do they help other brands like the Outlaws and beyond really get to a strong operating position as well. So, yeah, in the short, absolutely would rehire some of them.
Well, let's talk about as well, like, healthy operations, right? Yeah. I get that as a recurring theme in what we're talking about here. Yeah. There seems to be a very strange distribution of resources and a strange distribution of just, you know, cold hard cash, right? So, for example, I think the League of Legends team, having been accepted into LCS, I think that's a really big project. I think that's very important to the Optic Gaming identity. Personally, I would be putting money and resources into it. And yet what we've got is we've got a team that I think we would agree isn't particularly great. It's not commensurate with what we associate with Optic, all due respect to the players. And yet, there doesn't seem to be the resources to go and get those players. You've let somebody like Roman go, who is, again, hugely influential, talented, great talent scout, could have helped you with that project. He's not at the company anymore. Meanwhile, I see you guys expanding into Indian CSGO teams, which, you know, I understand emerging markets, but any money that was put into that would have been better served going to the League of Legends team.
Absolutely.
I see you guys getting Southeast Asian YouTubers to represent Optic. That feels very ill thought out when you've got, again, resources that could be going to the League of Legends team. Why is it that these kind of like harebrained schemes are taking priority over what should be a very clear focus for the organization?
Yeah, it's baffling for sure. Again, that's part of the old leadership model in a sense. And I want to touch on something on the League of Legends side of it. Mm-hmm. So there were actually internal discussions of should there be a rebrand for that team. I think we've drastically underserved them in a sense. I mean, think about this. It's the green wall and we finally get into League of Legends and there's internal discussions happening on a rebrand, which has since been stopped. That's one of the first things that I just said. We need to put a refocus on there. But admittedly, that's going to go through a rebuilding phase of its own, right? And you look international, that was actually not a part of the original vision. So you have a situation too, where I think there's like this assumed, naturally so, I understand why someone would assume this, that every executive at the company is aware of decisions that are being made at the top. But when you have a situation where someone at the top can make all these decisions and, you know, not be, challenged in a way where it can be stopped. you know, you've got yourself the makings of a situation where you can't focus on a League of Legends team, and it does get underserved, and it shouldn't be underserved. It should be overserved, right, in a sense. So, I absolutely understand the sentiment there.
Let's just jump onto this rebrand thing. I mean, again, this is insanity, right? I mean, like, the whole point of being in the LCS as a franchise team, you know, is that, and very fortuitously, beneficially, unlike the Overwatch League, you get to have your own brand be promoted through franchising, you know. So this is another reason why it's hugely beneficial to be part of that project. Why on earth would you want to rebrand one of the best brands in esports? I mean, like, how does that conversation even not, like, come up and not be dismissed within 30 seconds? Seems to me absolute insanity.
It is. Myself and a few others grossly objected to it and made a lot of arguments internally about why it shouldn't happen. I mean, like, look, ultimately, it's definitely not going to happen, right? Now we've made these leadership model changes. So it should have never been a discussion to focus on. In fact, part of the argument too is like, okay, listen, if we just admitted internally, in which we did, and said, if there's not enough of a focus on the content side of League of Legends, on the roster side, on whatever that is, right? Fine, we can chalk a little bit up to, okay, it's growing pains, it's getting side of it, but, you know, I don't want us to use that as a crutch. And then why didn't we just go back and do that first? And then years down the road, if we felt it made sense to do that, then it would be, I can't even, like, comprehend that conversation, right? Why would we ever want to do that, right? We want to make it successful with what it is and with of the Epic brand behind already. So, yeah, I agree.
So let's talk about another team that I feel was kind of also underserved in a way. And listen, I one thing I will say is there is a great debate about whether or not you can have a hugely successful Dota team and a hugely successful franchise League of Legends team, you know, coexisting. A lot of animosity between the two fan bases. A lot of questions about, you know, which developer do you want to kind of swear fealty to? It's a complex, you know, ecosystem to kind of wrap your head around. But you also did have, in my opinion, a fantastic opportunity with a Dota 2 team that was headed up by PPD. If anyone watching this doesn't know who PPD is, it's Peter Pan Dam. This is a guy who is incredibly intelligent, one of the great North American captains, led some incredible teams in his time, was even a CEO of Evil Geniuses for a time when they went through a management restructuring. And he had this team, which, by the way, while maybe there's an argument to say they underachieved, they still got to TI, they still put that brand awareness out there for Optic Gaming, and I think they had some really talented players on the roster. And of course, talking about jewels in the crown, you got PPD, a guy who was tailor-made for the Optic model of making content, doing podcasts, and when it came for renegotiations, Optic just kind of pushed them out to see and said, we don't want to necessarily go with a PPD rebuild, and then publicly made a post saying our visions don't align, we don't associate, you know, we don't think this team can align with our vision of excellence for Dota 2, and as a result we're going to completely exit from Dota 2 entirely. So that statement really surprised me, because first of all, I think that's a terrible disservice to the players. When you come out and say they're just not good enough, and actually it was such a bad experience, we're taking a heart out of Dota 2 entirely. I think that is a terrible farewell to players that served the organization. And then on top of that, you're quitting a game you've just spent a year making very solid inroads into. So again, what is happening with that decision? Why did you not re-sign PPD?
So again, chalk it up to another, it's one of those decisions that was not preferable, not designed to be that way. I think ultimately in the long run, we did try to do that. I know Jacob worked really hard on the back end with the esports team to try to get that re-signing going. And, you know, negotiations in esports, they get complicated and they get challenging. And it was a situation where it just didn't work out, right? So I think in the long run, we do want to be back in Dota. And I think we look at Dota as that was a successful first run. Yes. It really to not have that team continuing that legacy here. I think it's a missed opportunity for just for that worldwide prestige that comes from participating in Dota. We actually had a sponsor close specifically for TI, right? So I look at that as like a new revenue stream. Those are things that we're going to have to revisit.
Not the only team as well that was unduly cut. It's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but I read up on the Halo team that you had. This was a Halo team that, again, had represented the organization very well, not just in terms of professionalism, attitude, content creation, but excellence as well. A complete package. The things we associate with Optic, they take gold at the 2017 Halo World Championships. They take gold at DreamHack Denver. And again, another team that was just unceremoniously cut from the roster with seemingly little explanation for the fans. And again, the players seemed a little bit perplexed. They're releasing statements going, we had a great time with Optic. We had a great working relationship with Optic. We think we did a good job. And the fans are scratching their head going, why is this another team that's winning that's out the door? So is this, again, the same answer as what happened with Dota 2 and other teams before it, that this was, again, too many cooks in the kitchen, bad management, people, for some reason, didn't think Halo was a good way to go and decided to cut the team?
The whole Halo thing was absolutely poorly executed, right? I think internally, we look at the space and said, okay, contract negotiations are coming up for this team. And we probably looked at it more as like too much in the numbers, right? On one side, you have, salary requests. On another side, you have, budget allocations, right? Sometimes those things just don't match up and contract negotiations tricky. But what was lost in all of this, and this is something that I take responsibility for as well and wish I would have managed, is the people aspect, right? It's not just about, deal economics and esports scenes. These guys are a cornerstone, and they're all great guys. They're absolutely right. And they served our fan base well and our fan base love. And I felt, too, that I didn't step up enough to the plate to really say, hold on. We need to take a step back. We need to figure out a way to make this happen. There were many just circumstances like that where I think we could have come together more as a company and realized that the people we had here, they're instrumental to the green. And it's not so much about a very specific business decision. I mean, it is, right? We are running a business. We also can't lose sight of the fact that the way that they grew with our fan base and the tempo of our company, instrumental. It was very key at the time, and it was not handled properly.
Right. So I want to also ask about this Optic India thing. This is an absolute disaster. I mean, this is so when I saw the project, I went on my podcast with Thorin, was talking about it. There was a lot of skepticism. I understood it from a business perspective. But then what I quickly come to realize from having investigated it is, first of all, whoever was in charge of that project should be fired. They've done absolutely zero due diligence whatsoever in the acquisition of these players. It was very clear that Forsaken, the player who got caught cheating, was an established cheater in the Indian scene, was somebody who had engaged in boosting and selling accounts. This was all common knowledge. I mean, I don't have any ties to Indian Counter-Strike. I'm able to find this out with just a few conversations. What then happens is you have Optic India win all these tournaments, now completely illegitimately, and then go to an event and a player gets caught cheating on stage. I think that might be a first at a tournament of that size, and that now is forever associated with the Optic brand. And then, I don't even think it's potentially well handled in the aftermath. All the players get dropped for the actions of one player, and it probably looks like Optic India as a project is dead in the water. I don't know how much money it cost you or how much time and resources were invested into it, but all it has done is harm the brand. And Optic India as a brand, Optic India as a project, it's completely worthless even in the Indian region right now, let alone globally. So let's talk about that. I mean, this is insanity. This is like amateur hour bullshit.
Yeah, pure amateur hour. I completely agree. And too, like when you read the headlines as well, it says like, you know, optic management. And I just want to make sure we define optic management, right? Hmm. The international expansion was an initiative that was handled by that old model. When you look at optic management, that doesn't mean like Hector was involved. I wasn't involved with that. Jacob wasn't involved with that. It's a person who was empowered to make decisions about a brand who has since then been released. And when the word management is used, it should be more so like it's like a project management, right? So it's a former like team support coordinator that was elevated to a role to go out and recruit and hold tryout. Very long lasting impactful decisions about the future of a brand. And I'm not picking on anyone like that. I think that person was kind of set up for failure from the beginning and not set up for success and being supported. On top of that, you can't have a situation like that when you focus on so many different things because the checks and balances will fall through and then it turns into the mess that it turned into. It's unfortunate for those players. It's a tough decision, but you know, we made it and we're moving forward now.
Well, and I know you haven't named any names. I'll ask the question directly. When you're talking about this person who was set up to fail per se, are we talking about Alakus here? Did he oversee that project?
No, Alakus was not involved with that one, from what I remember. His mishaps and everything, I believe, are unrelated to that one specifically. Although I have to fact check that one for sure. The other person involved was actually a really great guy. Just it was a bad situation, and the due diligence was not exercised. And it shouldn't have even been launched the way it was, right? It should have been a full vetting process, and then we even get to the final players, and then you do the full vetting process again, right? Do it three or four times to avoid situations like this. International expansion, you look at it, it was just kind of like fire, expand. You're throwing darts, like five darts at once to really get it. And so, of course, something like this happens, right? It's, yeah, unfortunate.
Well, I mean, so the reason I asked if Alakus was associated with it is because, obviously, he was in the headlines for negative reasons. Yeah. Basically, in terms of what's going on in the Overwatch contenders scene and you know, terrible recordings of him coming out, you know, kind of sort of pressuring players to come into the Infinite House. I mean, first of all, I don't even know why there's a situation in Overwatch where one brand can run five teams. That's hugely unethical. That's a massive conflict of interest. So I don't even know why that's allowed, but Overwatch is its own beast, so whatever. But you've got a member of Optic Management that is on now a recording saying, "I know players better than you who would suck my dick for this opportunity that I'm offering you." Yeah. I mean, that is appalling. It's unprofessional. I don't know what's more offensive, the fact that he's actually saying that or the fact that he's not quick enough to understand that people will record you behaving in this manner these days. And so that's terrible. And then on top of that, I know firsthand that you guys were warned about hiring Alakus. I know Alakus from League of Legends. This is a guy who has unbelievable amounts of baggage. This isn't somebody you want representing your organization. Trust me on that. And lo and behold, you guys fail to heed that warning. You give this guy unbelievable amounts of power, and he's a kid, and he goes and wields it in this way. And again, that now becomes a reflection of Infinite. So two questions on that one. Sure. First of all, what's going on with Ali? Surely he can't have a position within the organization anymore moving forward. And second, why did you heed warnings from Endemic Esports? Why didn't you heed warnings from Endemic Esports people that this guy was a detriment to any brand that he worked for?
Yeah, so on the first point, he was terminated a couple of weeks ago, actually. Mm-hmm. I think over a month ago, for the very behavior that people kind of said was going to happen. There were actually warnings from myself and other players against hiring. When I had first heard about him too, I actually didn't know who he was. And so I think part of internally, when you have all these things going on, people kind of dismissed it. And then I had some players come forward and say, I'm not sure, you know, did you know that this is happening? I said, what are you talking about? And then they kind of give me the rundown of the background. And so I objectively said, do not do this, right? I know Hector said it as well. Many people have said there should not be a situation where that person's a part of it. And also for clarity, he was never on the optic side. That guy was hired on the Infinite side. So it's probably misrepresentation for him to attach his name to the optic brand, which, look, we've seen that before. People get excited because optic is big and awesome and you know, beautiful, but it doesn't mean you get to attach your name to it and then start making decisions. And we've seen people use it as leverage, right, to get into conversation they otherwise would not have access to. Yeah.
So look, there's one last sort of question on the negatives, and then I want to look to the future. I'm conscious of time, so I definitely want to ask, you know, what's going to change moving forward. But just before we get to that point, and it's kind of related, so Chris Chaney is fired as CEO, but let's be clear here, he is still kind of involved in Infinite Esports because he still has shares, right? He's still technically a board member. So what is going on there? Because it seems to me he's been an incredibly toxic element within the organization, and he's not fully out to pasture yet. He's still around. Surely, you know, he's got to be cut a check and told, you know, thanks for your time.
So on paper, there's still the affiliation, but no operational decisions, strategic direction decisions, revenue decisions, team decisions, optic decisions, none of that is under his purview.
Okay. But he still is there on paper. Aren't you worried that this person who might be feeling a bit disgruntled about being fired is going to be able to influence? I mean, let's not forget, he hired some of the people that are still working at the company. He was, you know, so he's got allies within the company. And every time you board members like yourself who want to try and course correct and steer the ship back in the right direction, there is a chance you could run up into some resistance because Chris Chaney's still around and able to untowardly influence things. I mean, surely the best way forward is to have this guy completely sabotage.
In the event there was any type of, you know, I guess just interruption of that nature, I mean, it would be handled, right? So I can't forecast the scenario. I can just anticipate it. There has not been any reason to believe that, you know, bad things are going to continue to happen from his end. So I'm trying to make sure I speak professionally about that, but. We have a very clear directive that I'm very confident about in terms of getting our focus back on optic, but also, of course, making sure that there are no more interruptions, right? Or if there are, they're dealt with swiftly. And if they don't fit in, right, any type of strategic initiative, whether it's good or bad, it doesn't fit in with the right direction that we need to go to get back to our roots, plus, you know, kind of a new way of looking at how we continue to grow, especially in content, then it's going to be discarded and we're not going to look back on it. The controls in terms of decisions for the brand and who can actually make a decision about the brand, that thing is getting slim again. It's going to be very.
Well, the final question before we get to the kind of wrap up, you know, you've been on board for all of these decisions. Okay. So, yeah. And very respectfully, you've said, I take ownership, I take responsibility. Why is it that somebody like yourself, old school optic, somebody who's worked with Hex, wasn't able to execute his vision as he took a backward step? Why did you not resist more of these changes? Because again, my understanding was Hex only agreed to take as far back a seat as he did because you were there. You were the man. You were meant to, you know, make sure nothing bad could happen. So why were you not more vocal? Why were you not more resistant? I mean, you know, you were vice president. Now you've been promoted. But even at the time, you're a powerful voice within the company.
Yeah. Again, that goes back to me really just saying, I wish I would have done that. I wish I actually would have flexed that and a little bit more objective, or at least largely more objective to what was going on. And I think I started that way at first. And then I tried to say, okay, I don't want to be a situation where we're creating friction all over the place. So how can I, going back to what I was saying earlier, kind of serve somewhere in the middle where we're getting the best of both worlds? And what that ultimately led to is just misalignment on my end. And yeah, I do own up to that. I should have fought harder for it. And I think towards the end, before all these changes came, I think that's kind of what comes back out of me, right? Is to say my mistake in this is not being more vocal about it, whether that to the rest of management or to the board directly. And ultimately it led to a situation where, you know, we did step in and do something, or I did. And I felt like I, from that perspective and my error in that, and have grown a lot because of it and been doing a lot of thinking about it, that's never going to happen again. That is something that, yeah, tough situation. And I wish I would have been more aggressive, way more aggressive. Okay.
Is there a road back to get Hex making more hands-on decisions for the organizations? Because for the organization, because obviously you guys, you have a partnership, you have a shorthand and understanding. You've been associates, friends, co-workers for many, many years, and the partnership seemed to be working when it was just the two of you.
Absolutely.
So is there a road back? I think a lot of the fans would feel more reassured if Hector was going to be starting to have much more of a say in the, certainly at least the esports decisions of the company.
Yeah, so just for clarity on that, he's regularly involved with content. He worked very closely with Jacob on going through the re-signing of like the COD team. And yeah, definitely plays roles on that regard. I've reached out to Hector, I think, you know, a couple of times since, you know, I think since March, right? And I think we will rebuild that rapport and do that in a way that I think is both rewarding to the fans, the business, just figure out how we have our eyes forward, right? And I'm going to be keeping very tight controls on how the brand is influenced. Hector being more involved with content and being looped into what's happening is nothing but a great thing.
So the big question, it sounds like, you know, you're trimming the fat. You guys are kind of, you know, restructuring the managerial process, the decision-making process, which I think is great. But what are you going to do just in terms of, you know, you've used this phrase, we're going to go back to our roots. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And how are you going to bring Optic back in line with what the fans believe Optic to be?
Yeah, I think a key way to attack this, I know we kind of discussed it, maybe unpack it more here, is from the content perspective. When you think about us back in kind of like a, you know, 2014, 2016, we're just crushing it, right? Having a lot of good content come out, we're pushing through, and we're continuing to innovate. And I think, not that we've lost our way there, but place in that regard. And again, this is I mean this very constructively. We need to go back and have that accountability internally. The organization, but also the content creators, and then the vision for how content is launched on that Optic Nation. Right now, it's coming out around, you know, 3 videos a week here and there, but we want to get that to a daily video programming process, right? What does it look like? You know, we launch Vision Live on Twitch. Well, how do we get to a spot where we're launching most videos live on Twitch to create that environment, right? So we're thinking about those programming. It takes a lot of resources to get stuff like that done, and it takes a lot of buy-in and cooperation. So having those high standards and high accountability, both personally and collectively, we'll see that come back in the organization. We don't have a choice, right? I think that's really key. And then the other way we were kind of talking about before, when I say tight controls, we don't want to empower people to make decisions that they're, it's not because they're dumb or incapable of making these decisions, but there's certainly a time in life in your professional career where you have to be ready to make those decisions. You know, really, really pulling back the reins is a key way. So, you know, those two methods we kind of look at as there's a proactive measure, there's a reactive measure. And then, of course, from our esports, there was a poll that actually came out. This was on our subreddit, and it said, do you think that Optic should put more of a focus on building stronger competitive rosters or acquiring more content creators? And it was 60-40 in favor of the competitive rosters, right? Mm. And I think it roughly came to about 300 people going in the voting process. You know, is that the right sample size? Well, it seems to be, right? So it's to say that I think from our organization, and to your point earlier, both are, but to your point earlier, that content is still very, very, very important. And we want to make sure that we have that good balance, but I think they can both coexist in a really strong way that continues to be the optic that we know and love, but also with a fresh direction, right? There will still be some changes here and there that I think are for the, they'll be more calculated. They'll be more looped in across the process and more feedback. I think in the short level or short term, that's really how we're starting to position this in the midst of cleaning up a whole host of other changes that could be unrelated to optic across the, you know, again, going back to the beginning, this infinite that people are seeing today is obviously not what we wanted it to be. There's either a lot to clean up and a lot to think about.
Well, just as we get into wrapping up, because I know you've got another appointment that you need to get to.
I have another 15 minutes if you need it, by the way.
I think we're getting to a place where we can, kind of wrap it up. I think you've been very forthright in answering a lot of the questions. But I have to ask, you know, what does the immediate future look like? It's been this slew of negative headlines, of what feels like missed opportunities, you know, big players kind of leaving the organization, winning teams leaving the organization, then teams like CSGO India, kind of really running the brand through the mud. You know, so what does the immediate future look like? What are the plans? What are the immediate corrections in line with that vision of, you know, content creation, which I think Optic don't need to worry about? I think you're always going to have that nailed, especially with Hector kind of presiding over that. He knows what works, got a proven track record in that regard. But what does the immediate future look like? What are the projects that are going to bring back some of the allure and luster to the Optic Gaming brand?
Well, I think we're already starting to do that, right? Again, there's a lot of different parts of the ecosystem that affect how, you know, merch decisions, event decisions, standard player contract renegotiations, and then, of course, all of the fallout that you've kind of seen. So it's really cleaning up the ecosystem around it so it can continue to not be destroyed by the things that it needs to get done in terms of the content and stuff. So I think we're already starting to make those changes. It goes back really far more simple. The reason why I keep reinforcing that it's going to be content and then focus on teams, and we're seeing like these polls come out from our fans that want them, is because the answer really is that simple. Now it's a matter again of saying what else in our infinite ecosystem it can be repositioned in a way that helps Optic achieve what it's supposed to do. And of course, not just Optic, right? We've used some Outlaws and a few other brands that we want to make sure are strong. Internally, one of the answers that I can give you is that we've looked at, like, we have a content company, a sales company, there was an internal marketing team, and we've started to consolidate that into one. So now you kind of have this full service type agency that can really go out and best serve the sales pipeline, the sponsorship pipeline, the delivery of those partnerships and sponsorships from the content, the social side, the design side, integrating with the team, you know, the live streaming VOD. So there's a lot of very simple measures to say, like, how do we just, this is my long-winded way of saying, how do we just get that business healthy, right? It's not just so much about fixing any type of cost issues or expense issues, but it is also about that internal alignment. So we're working towards something. We can't have a situation where we don't know what we're working towards at a high level from, you know, various goal perspectives. If you can't measure your progress and how you're supposed to be achieving that goal, then all you're doing is a bunch of busy work, right? So getting rid of just a lot of the nonsense of it, which we're almost done doing, right? There's going to be some more changes, but we believe that it gets us to where we want in terms of that healthy operating position. When we unpack it, that's what I really mean when we say that.
And I suppose it is worth bringing up that it hasn't all been entirely doom and gloom, although I would say, you know, certainly more losses than wins of late. But let's just talk a little bit about the success of Houston Outlaws as a project. I mean, I think certainly from someone with my cursory understanding of the Overwatch League, it looks to be a brand that's been hugely successful, has really worked well in terms of localization with the fan base. Is this going to be a big focus for you guys moving forward? Because I've talked to a lot of owners and they kind of say, like, they're still a little bit frustrated that they're building up these secondary brands and it's not their own brand, you know, that's going to take center stage within the Overwatch League. But I think the Houston Outlaws, because of the, you know, colorization, because it's such a great brand in its own right, I think people, they probably don't think of it as the Houston Outlaws. I think in a lot of way, people just think of it as Optic anyway, in their minds, you know, with just a different logo. So has that been as much of a success as it appears externally? And what's going to be happening moving forward in that Overwatch realm?
Yeah, great question. We feel the Outlaws are a great success. We look at a brand like that that was created. It's officially like 1 year old or almost 1 year old, right? First saw the logo, which I think was roughly early November. And the colors were actually different at the time, but we had them realigned to be Optic colors. It was the number one thing, like make these colors look like Optic. But in that 1 year time frame of launching that brand, like even though we were in the middle of the pack team, like we had some good stages where we performed well, but in the end we ended up right roughly like 7th place or so. When we go to a live event, so we did this thing called Band Together, and we took our players from Houston to San Antonio to Austin, that's our home market, those three, and at each event we'd have over 500 people show up to get signings. They should be showing up hours early. Houston, in our own home market, I think there was 1100 was the line that was wrapped around the building to come out, autographs, and meet with the players. So even just from a live event activation, we see that thing as very successful. I think you can even Google some of the pictures. One of the very first ones is a picture in like this hangar, and it's ugly. We got this watch party together, but I think the full number there was, I think it was 633 or 733, something along those. We hit max capacity that we were allowed to on that. And that was done one month after the brand was created for a preseason game. So we're going to continue that. We're looking forward to the future when we have our own home stadium. We can start curating more like kind of like a traditional sports team, but you know, looking at the in-venue revenue, looking at the activations, the fan experience. I think there's really great ways that we can continue to grow that brand. Obviously, this past weekend we just did the Gilded Gala with the London Spitfire. The London Spitfire then will be coming out here sometime in the next couple of months to do our own version of that. These activations that are happening in the off season are really creating this fan rapport that create a good environment. So, yeah, we're very excited about how we can both, you know, grow that business, monetize that business, grow the brand and content profiles of those pro and make a good brand out of it. We'll continue to make a good brand.
So look, this is a question just for you, okay?
Sure.
You know, a guy, as I said, who has been around Optic, second only to Hex. So do you feel that you are now ready to, you know, with the promotion, actually lead? Are you a bit more boardroom savvy? You know, do you feel that you can be the right curator for the Optic Gaming brand moving forward?
Absolutely. So my background, but I co-founded Optic in 2006. This is when it was more like just friends who play video games on the couch, right? Hector at the time was a referee for our games, right? This is in the Optic book, if you ever get a chance to read it.
Yeah, I have, so, actually. It's great.
So. Yeah, cool. Thank you. So when we brought in Hector, it was really his leadership that took the team to where it was, right? Built a great brand, a green wall. Like that was formed in 2010 of all of us, you know, standing behind our approach. He really solidified team as a content brand. Did a great job with that, right? I think one of the best jobs across all of esports history. And then my route really went to, I was at Machinima for a while doing the whole multi-channel network thing, right? Remember that was you know, there's lots of fun there with the multi-channel networks on YouTube. So I was working at a company called Machinima for then I got recruited by Google to help build and grow their gaming esports vertical. I was there for about 2 years, and then went back into the corporate world, various startups and other initiatives. During that time, from Machinima all the way through, I got a lot of the boardroom experience, executive strategic direction, planning, building enough of a prowess to say that we can have this business model and be able to monetize and go forward. So I feel very confident about the direction, especially having a return or renewed focus on Optic, right? While still touching in with some of the new and making sure we're optimizing some areas. So very confident. I'm very confident in the new man as well that we've kind of appointed and empowered with people. They share the same vision about that renewed focus and same love for the other brands like the Houston Outlaws. And there's a lot more alignment across the board. And the board has given me just incredible support, right? In this type of difficult time, I feel like the respect of my coworker is there mutually as well. And I'm trusting them with you know, a lot of tough decisions as well. So we will get back to a very good spot. I'm very confident about that. And I'm looking forward.
Well, look, it's been great to talk to you. I also respect as well, you know, there's a lot of esports companies that, like, they don't want to come out and face the music when things are bad. They go into hiding. There's a phrase in the industry, I'm sure you've heard it, kill it with silence, you know. A lot of people take that kind of way, that method of getting through difficult times. They think if we just don't talk about it, the fans will forget, there'll be another drama, you know, whatever. But yeah. I think it's very admirable that you kind of come out and decided to face the music. It's tough, and I know it's been a tough time for Optic. I know it's been a tough time for Infinite. I certainly hope you get it right. Optic, just speaking as an esports guy myself, it's a brand that when they started coming in and getting involved in my games and moving into PC, you know, the PC world, I was like really excited about it. I got to meet Hector, somebody I've always admired and respected. And it's provided great opportunities for, you know, Counter-Strike players and everything else, you know, Dota players, League of Legends players. It's a project that I really want to see succeed. I hope you guys can turn it around, but certainly a few choppy waters to get through.
We will absolutely turn it around. I have no doubts about that. We will get there too. Yeah, I agree with you real quick on the silence thing, right? When that whole Halo thing went down, I had even told our subreddit, come on and do an AMA. And I think they had kind of felt like, well, they're very PR focused. And I hope this kind of is like a redirection of that. I don't think that wasn't my intention. And so I just pulled back and I said, I'm not sure what to do, but I'm glad we had a chance to do this interview. If we need to do a follow-up one, or we feel like other questions come out, let's do it. And let's ask the hard questions. Let's dive. Are there any other difficult questions we didn't cover? Do you want me to elaborate on that?
I think we've been pretty thorough. I hope nobody thinks that I was giving you softball questions. I don't know if I could ask them much harder than that, but
we knew you'd ask questions and wanted to make sure that they were answered.
Yeah, well, that's great. And as I said, look, I'll let you get to your next appointment. Thank you very much for coming on the show, Ryan. I really, really appreciate it. And of course, to everybody who's watching this, just one final shout out to our sponsors on the channel. It's rivalry.gg. You can go to rivalry.gg/RLS to support the channel, where you'll qualify for up to $350 of VIP bonuses. That's it from me. That's it from Ryan. Thanks very much for watching, and I will see you next time.